You're listening to the Urban Warfare Project podcast from the Modern War Institute at West Point. I'm John Spencer, Chair of Urban Warfare Studies at MWI and host of this podcast. Today's guest on the podcast, frequent guest of the podcast, my good friends Major Jason Giroux and Stuart Lyle. Jason is a Canadian Army officer and urban warfare historian assigned to the Canadian Army Doctrine and Training Center. Stuart is the Urban Operations Research Lead for the UK-based Defense Science and Technology Laboratory, DSTL. This is our annual Urban Warfare Scholars Christmas wish list. So there has been a lot that has happened in 2024 involving urban warfare. This is us sitting around the table saying, what do we want for militaries in general based on our study? I have put a few constraints as the host privilege to the discussion, but not many, like not even what can fit in a stocking or under a tree. I think we did that one year. Nope, whatever you want. And it can be if Santa or whomever didn't bring your wish last year, then you can talk about it again. Yeah, that's pretty much the only constraints. So I'm looking forward to the 2024 conversation and wish list. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, John.
Yeah, thanks, John, for having me back. I think this is my fifth Urban Warfare Project podcast, so I need to thank you again for having me back. And it's always great hearing Stu's saltier Irish accent again. And just like our 2021 and 23 Christmas Wishlist podcast, we're all urban operations instructors, but Stu and John and I, we attacked this urban operations challenge from three different backgrounds, right? John is an American urban operations researcher and writer, and Stu is an Irish urban operations defense scientist with the British Army, and I'm a Canadian urban warfare historian, and the three of us are all very passionate about this particular subject. So because the three of us approach urban operations from these different angles and experiences and contexts, we hope to give you another good show today and that you will walk away having learned something. So thanks again, John.
Thank you, Jason, and thank you for giving the demographics. I am American. I bleed red, white, and blue. We won't discuss, which we do frequently, kind of our unique military's history, and especially even with attacking the White House and things like that. We won't talk about that. I don't want to cut us short. I look forward to the conversation. We'll start this year with Stu.
Okay, thanks very much. So my first one is that my first wish is that I want more people to get more heavily involved in this subject. We need more voices in the urban mafia, as we're sort of called. It's not a big community, the people who sort of regularly study this subject seriously. So we need to get more voices in to try and bring in some dissenting voices, and actually just to push the subject. It's a big subject. It's a complex one, and it's not best served by such a small community. This has been a perennial issue. So if we go back to 1973, SLA Marshall wrote Notes on Urban Warfare, and in the opening of that, he describes a curious void in the literature of warfare around this particular subject. You fast forward a quarter of a century, you've got Roger Spiller writes Sharp Corners, looking at urban operations at the end of the 20th century. And he then also writes about a kind of vacuum that surrounds the subject. So this has been a perennial issue from World War II all the way through to today. You look back over the 20 plus years of the global war on terror, you had enduring operations in Baghdad, Basra, Ramadi, and then you had pitched battles like Fallujah and Mosul, and slightly further afield places like Marawi. So this subject has been a recurring theme throughout modern warfare, but actually it gets very short shrift in the serious military science theoretical works. And I think that needs to change. We need to get more people in there. You get regular short pieces written for military professional magazines, mostly the US, and then you get some specials in military journals. So British Army Review did one a few years ago. There's been one just come out recently, part one anyway, from the Canadian Army Journal, which Jason was guest editor for. A little plug for you there. But they're few and far between. So one of the things that kind of really hit me as a stark reminder of this was I spent about 4 hours trawling through the UK Defence Academy's library, one evening. And there was all the history books. There was just row after row of history books looking at various urban battles and campaigns, and you know, specific ones that hinged on urban notes. But when I found the urban theory section, or what you could describe best as the sort of urban theory section, it was about half a shelf, and it was quite a depressing sight, sort of tacked on the end of a very long line in the library. It did include yours, John. It included your book, Tony King's, David Cullen's, and there was a few others there. But it was mostly sort of padded out with some hard copy RAND reports as well. But actually, it was quite indicative of the fact that actually there's not an awful lot of serious writing on this, certainly from a theoretical side. So I'll kind of echo what Amos Fox says, you know, where have all the military theorists gone? We need to get some more in there. If we do think about who's constituted within the sort of the urban mafia, we don't really run out of fingers when we start trying to name off the people who seriously study this subject. And like I say, it's too big, it's too complex a subject, and it's not best served by such a small cohort. We're very good, we can disagree. But like I say, we just need to get some more people in there with some alternative views. Yes, Jason pointed out the fact that actually we've got very different backgrounds and stuff. But there's an awful lot of people who would bring in alternative viewpoints. That would be a really good thing to do. I know that I'm guilty of this as well. Most of my writing is not publicly releasable because I work for the UK Ministry of Defence. So I'm going to be tasking myself with trying to change that and try and write some more stuff that is releasable. But I think, yes, we do need to get my Christmas wish list would start by having more people engaging with the subject seriously from a military sciences perspective and actually trying to push this theoretically further forward, which can then inform doctrine and other things.
All right. Well, thank you. So what I heard was create more of us, but I will use my host privilege to opine on that, because I have been advocating, as you know, many writings on what the military could do, because it's not my wish list. I'm not giving this up. The global gap isn't training centers. It isn't gear. It is experts to inform everybody's theories, doctrine, the .mil PF, what we call it, all that. But I will say, thank you for the plug on my book. Was on the shelf. That's awesome. And you can buy it on Amazon. Shameless plug. I don't care. That you talked about sharp corners. I agree. And there's another one, Block by Block. I mean, it takes time, right? So even, you know, you talk about all the great military theorists that we teach at West Point, from Clausewitz, Jomini, Warren, Sun Tzu, you name it. I don't want our stuff read when we die. I want it read now. I want it part of the debate. You know, even John Boyd's stuff, it doesn't hit till later with his presentations. Jason and I have been on this very long process, and now with Liam Collins as well, doing the case studies, which are, like you said, there's lots of urban warfare that happened, but they're not separated from the histories, as in, okay, what did we learn in this very unique urban warfare situation? Already at the Modern War Institute, we've published case studies on Mogadishu, Morari, Fallujah, Ortona, Suez City, Hawaii, Mosul, Stalingrad, have others in the work, Aachen, Sadr City, Gaza City, Susha, Manila, that hopefully, well, one, that will be a book. All these case studies will be put into an expanded book, which will add hopefully to the shelf there, to the theories. But I agree with you. I don't want to take up a lot of time, but I 100% agree with you. But whoever's military or academic institution, we can go to the fact that there's no centers, there's no offices, there's a guy who rotates, all those things are the why we don't have more of us. As you know, some of this started off as just deep passions for studying. I have a dream job, but other people, you know, are doing it on the side. We need more positions, resources, experts, conversations, writings, commission studies, all this stuff. But none of that's my wish, so you can't take it.
It also goes to the fact that if an urban conflict happens, I'm a civilian, I'm not going to be deploying, right? So we need to get more people in uniform also engaging with the subject as well, because they're the ones who, you know, need to start learning about it now, need to start reading about it, writing about it, and building up that professional cohort.
No, but the same thing with the combat observer, right? So like, I can't take you into Gaza with me. Oh, I haven't asked, but if you want, let me know. Because we can't have our militaries learning from their own experiences. You know, you have the professional military education, but there's so much that's changing, which hopefully is changing our wish list, that I think we should have combat observers, not one of my wish lists, like that can also specialize in going into urban battles like I have and getting those lessons firsthand that inform the studies that like you do that are most people can't get access to, but inform the doctrine that Jason does. Not my wish list, but I agree with you, Stuart. Okay, Jason, over to you.
Yeah, good to go. Actually, what I'm going to do is my second wish was actually related to Stu's first wish. So I'm going to jump ahead to my second wish and talk about it. So I'll go back to my introductory remarks in that I'm an urban warfare historian and an urban operations instructor. So I bounce back and forth between the academic and the instructional worlds. And if you've bought into what Stu has said and you want to start writing about urban operations, urban warfare, that's great. Because on the military side, I am seeing an increased production of more reports and intelligence summaries, after action reviews, and updated doctrinal publications. And on the academic side, there are slowly more books, journals, and articles, both online and in print, on this particular subject, which is great. The more we become educated on this subject, the better. The world continues to urbanize, depending on the resources you read, anywhere from 50 to 65% of the world's population currently lives in an urban environment. And by the time the next generation of children grow up to become adults, the resources predict that 75 to 85% of the world's population will be living in an urban environment. And because of that, and the increasing number of urban warfare battles that have been occurred in the 20th and the 21st centuries, the literary reads from the military and academic worlds have been accumulating very slowly as well. The challenge I'm seeing, though, from some of these publications is that it's very clear to me that the writers may not have very much knowledge or experience when it comes to discussing urban operations. So they make historical or factual mistakes, or they provide incorrect analysis, which tells me they didn't get their work checked by an urbanista beforehand. I'll give a couple examples here, and I'll try to remain diplomatic. But another country's military, not Canada, published an after-action review on the Russians in the first weeks of the Russia-Ukrainian war, and the urban battles of Kyiv and Kharkiv in particular. And somebody who knows my passion for urban operations sent the after-action review to me, and after I read it, it was clear to me that the writers, not Canadians, did not know anything about Russian urban operations doctrine or why the Russians had done what they had done in Kyiv and Kharkiv. And at the end of the document, there was an email address in which you could send comments or questions. So I took advantage of that and I sent a diplomatic email stating that the after-action review was flawed because the writers did not know Russian urban operations doctrine. And I proceeded to explain why, very diplomatically, why the Russians had conducted their attacks the way they did. And that military unit's short and rather curt email response was, "We stand by our product." To which my rather blunt response in return was, "If you want to stand by a product that demonstrates a lack of knowledge on the subject, then that's your choice and your military looks pretty foolish." There's another publication out there entitled Small Arms, Big Cities. And for the most part, it's awful. There are two really good chapters, and one of them is written by some guy named John Spencer. And there is one other good chapter, but the remaining chapters, well, after reading the book, I classified these chapters as either fine, okay, useless, or awful. So it was clear to me that the editor and most of the contributors, except for that John Spencer guy, knew little to nothing about urban operations and didn't have the work checked. And by the way, folks, John has had to deal with this too. I won't even bring up the garbage article that was written that compelled John to write a rebuttal piece called "The City Is Not Neutral, Why Urban Warfare Is So Hard." Okay, it's okay and understandable that urban operations may not be their specialty, but I will suggest that if you want to write something about this topic, because of the rapid urbanization of the world and because urban operations have become more prevalent, then what that also means is that it behooves you to go seek out those who are knowledgeable about the subject so that they can review your work to ensure that you're being accurate and correct before you publish your book or chapter or article after action review. Otherwise, you look extremely foolish and you've done all that work for nothing. I'm seeing more and more urban warfare publications that have historical or factual inaccuracies or poor analysis. So folks, I've been in the military now for 29 and a half years, and while I may not have a PhD, I do have 23 years of professional, personal, operational, practical, instructional, academic, historical, doctrinal, urban operations experience, training, knowledge, and writing. it was nice. It's nice of John to say that I'm an urban operations expert. It gives me a nice and warm and fuzzy in the tummy, and I get all reclumped and stuff when John says that. But in all honesty, after 23 years, I still don't think I'm an expert in this particular subject. I prefer to think that I'm a passionate student of urban operations and a passionate student of urban warfare history, because I still find myself learning something new about how to conduct operations in this environment every year, every month, every week, and every day. 23 years of urban operations experience, training, research, and writing, and I still go to my fellow urbanistas for knowledge and advice. If I'm still doing it after 23 years, well, then maybe you should too. I've had dozens of people ask me to review their urban operations writings, and I love doing it because I'm confident I'll always learn something new from them. John, I don't know if you remember, we had one guy on Twitter send a video to us. He was showing the Russians during the Battle of Mariupol, Ukraine, and he sent it to us because he didn't know if the soldiers in the video were applying good tactics, techniques, and procedures. And when he sent the video to you and I, John, he said, you guys see the Matrix when it comes to these kinds of videos, which I actually thought was a really nice compliment. I recently rewrote the Canadian Armed Forces Urban Operations Doctrinal publication, and I sent it out not only across my military last September. And by the way, if you're in the Canadian military, I need you to read that and give me a review. And I sent it to all of my fellow urbanistas so that they can give an honest critique of it. And that includes John and Stu. I've gone to John and Stu now a few times and asked them questions, or I've asked them to review my work. You know, Stu, you're very kindly. Thanks for the shout out there for the Canadian Army Journal. I was the guest editor for those. The first urban warfare themed edition has been published already, and now the second one will be published in 2025. I wrote my article for the second edition on Russian urban operations doctrine in the battles of Kyiv and Kharkiv, and which is why I knew one of the reasons why that after action review from that other country, not Canada, was absolute garbage. But after I wrote that article, I reached out to Lieutenant Colonel retired Les Grau, Lieutenant Colonel Charles Bartles, and our fellow urbanista, Dr. Charles Knight, all of whom are subject matter experts on the Russian military and the Russian urban operations doctrine, because I needed to get that article right. And then I reached out to John and I asked him to review it because he's been to Ukraine four times since the war began. And he's actually talked to people who were involved in the urban fighting there. So I needed to make sure that article was doctrinally and factually correct. And John has done the same thing. You know, he's considered one of the world's leading experts on this topic. But when he and our good friend Liam Collins wrote Understanding Urban Warfare, they were kind enough to allow me to review it and edit the entire book before it was published. Please, folks, if you're writing anything on urban operations, have your work checked. I'm not so egotistical that I'm suggesting you have to send it to me. I will gladly provide the contact information for John and Stu at the end of this podcast if you want to send your work to them instead. But just reach out to somebody within the Urbanista community, please. If you go to the U.S. Army 40th Infantry Division's Urban Operations Electronic Library, there's a tab there called Contacts that has a number of urbanistas listed there. So please have your writing work checked. Otherwise, like I stated earlier, you will have wasted a lot of your time and will end up looking very foolish. And that's my second wish, John.
All righty. Well, I appreciate all those compliments. I don't know where to start with those. I mean, the only thing you didn't say was Godfather, but we'll hold that for later. I don't know what a diplomatic email is. I assume that's Canadian niceness for a, with all due respect, kind of what we call terminology.
Yes.
I will give Canadian military, and of course you, Jason, a huge credit for actually finding the expert and then assigning that expert in charge of the doctrine to be written and reviewed. We've talked about in the past, or maybe we have or haven't, about who gets assigned a doctrine and how doctrine gets put into the cycle and reviewed and everything. And sometimes they bring, you know, like even FM 324, when General Petraeus put together the counterinsurgency doctrine review, he brought together a team of experts. That rarely actually happens. So the fact that the Canadian military have selected you, and I've seen the work, is a huge credit to the Canadian military of using an expert that they have.
Yeah, thanks, brother.
When the military gets it right, that's a special thing. Okay, so my wish list. So I'll try to be short and sweet. It's all combined, of course. Not that we think alike. We do disagree, and Stu, and we have the debate, and I know what he means by having some professional debates about things. What I say is you can have your own opinions, but you can't have your own facts. Yeah, not talking to Stu, talking to, you know, all the experts. By X, I mean what used to be Twitter, now X, experts that some of us deal with. for the John Spencer, and I don't even know if we'll get to a full second and third round, if I could just have one wish, as somebody who has helped work for things, like, and I'm going to be very U.S. military focused, sorry guys, because it is about resourcing. It is about institutional cultures. Why is there still this gap? Why do all the senior leaders in the, especially U.S. military, who, long list of them for years now, we need to train, man, and equip for urban warfare. Urban is the future. We need this. To date, still, there is not one office, one act, you know, fully funded position in the U.S. military whose sole purpose for a long time is to focus on urban operations from the tactical to the strategic level. And that bleeds over to everything, to why we don't have, you know, courses. We don't have an urban operations school. We have this course that Jason, Stu, Jacob, Stoyle, and of course, General Woolridge helped put together. We taught it. Funding unclear if it'll ever continue because it's what the institution does. But it all goes back to really institutional resources, institutional priority. Everybody has their ideas of what the future is, what's the need. The U.S. military spends billions being the strongest, most prepared military, no offense guys, but spends billions to do that. But there's very few of it where you can trace and say, well, it's what's focused on urban warfare. And yes, I could argue the opposite if somebody put me on a debate on, well, this is urban related and things like that. And, you know, environment agnostic. My wish is that the Department of Defense would create an Undersecretary of Defense for urban operations and make it the executive agent of urban operations for all the services. This is a kind of inside the Pentagon talk. I would put it underneath the Office of the Secretary of Defense for Policy. There is no Department of Defense executive agent for urban operations right now. There used to be one under U.S. Joint Forces Command, which when it closed, that Office of Urban Operations closed down. So that's why the Joint Urban Operations Doctrine hasn't been updated since 2007, I think, and unlikely to be updated again. If we created this office under Secretary of Defense for Urban Operations, or the Assistant Secretary of Defense, whatever, underneath the Undersecretary, I think you would get the institutional change that we've been arguing for and the things on our list, more experts, resources for, like the course that the 40th ID, 40th Infantry Division started. You would get answers to questions of like, how are you training, manning, and equipping for urban operations? You say it's a priority. This is what's happening. Where are your studies on the lessons, urban lessons of Ukraine, Gaza? Like, I believe that that office, I'm being more specific than I have in the past, because I've talked all these and written the four transformational things the U.S. Army could do, but I'm being more specific. The fact that there's not one office focused on, with all this urbanization, global urbanization, population growth, the size of our militaries, all the theories we talk about, going back to Stu's on the theories, that says you might not have an interest in urban warfare, but it has an interest in you. And if we don't have the correct institutional hierarchy of priority forcing mechanisms, then it doesn't exist. So it'll still be bottom up trying, you know, all the people contacting us, which is great. Like, I want to do some unit training. What can I do? Or I want to talk about future capabilities. What do you have? What do you think what do we need in urban operations specifically based on what you're seeing? Without this institutional thing, it all is bottom up. When I want it top down, and that's where you would get some change from my understanding of the process. So that's my thing. We'll keep passing the baton back to you, Stu.
Okay, thanks. So my second one is, I want militaries to sweat the small stuff. So you've heard the phrase, you know, don't sweat the small stuff. I want them to change that and say, no, actually, let's focus on it, and actually, and let's sweat the small stuff. Basically, what this boils down to is, a lot of what I do for my job is help the military, make British Army in particular, make decisions about capability requirements, force structures, that sort of thing. And when you're dealing in that realm, you're dealing with capability development or requirement setting for kit and equipment, the low-level micro-tactical stuff is usually much down the lower priority ladder. That doesn't mean that it never happens, but it's much lower down the priority ladder. And I get it. When you're talking about the big procurement programs, they eat resources in terms of personnel and time. But whenever a problem there, a higher priority problem gets solved, it usually gets replaced by another higher priority. So the lower level tactical stuff sits in that kind of purgatory zone where it makes small incremental gains, but then you'll also have something falls off the shelf from out of service date or what have you. So you take a big step back and then you're back to making incremental gains. So I'd like to see some of that change, because when you start looking at urban operations, the stuff that has a big impact at that micro tactical level then suddenly is magnified. Because urban operations, the nature of the terrain, the nature of the fighting that goes on there, it breaks things up into smaller micro-tactical battles that collectively form an urban battle. But you're not maneuvering brigades. You are fighting small pitched battles and you're supporting them at each echelon above. So suddenly, requirements at that platoon level, the squad level, suddenly become much more important. Things like, you know, your ability for your infantry to speak to your armor, your infantry weapon systems, even something as simple as ladders become suddenly this quite important thing. We can sometimes get sort of focused on nano drones and situational awareness systems, augmented reality overlays. I know you love those, John. But then suddenly we find out that the defender has blocked the ground floor entryways into the building and we don't have a ladder. So, you know, you're weighed down with 70 pounds of lightweight, high-tech gear, and you can't get through a first floor window because you haven't got a ladder. You know, so it's those fundamental capabilities that actually are often overlooked. And that's something that's kind of been quite a bugbear for me in my role. We also have this habit of kind of having that one system to rule them all. And again, you know, it's because things are the procurement cycles and stuff, none of them are easy. I understand that. I work in that space. But it's easier to write one procurement contract, have one supply chain, have one sustainment effort. And what that means is it drives us to have that one weapon system that can then prosecute 95% of the targets, because that then will cover off 95% of the target set. A good example of this is NLAW, right? We know NLAW is awesome, and it is. It will defeat a main battle tank. You know, we've seen plenty of video footage of it. But NLAW is a heavy system. It's expensive, and it is actually overspec'd for the majority of armor threats. You know, yes, if you need to defeat a main battle tank, it's going to do that. But if you're firing against light armor or even a technical, then something, you know, much lighter is perfectly suitable. We've bought Carl Gustav for the British Army. We have bought that to replace the anti-structure munition, and again, like, Carl Gustav's great. We have bought it in fairly small numbers, though. When you start looking at, you know, the demand signal is going to come for these systems when you start getting into a high-intensity urban fight, it's going to go through the roof. So we need to have a truckload of cargo staffs with a suite of ammunition. And in my analysis, we wouldn't have to have those augmented again by other lightweight systems. So, you know, we see this, some other armies do this where they have something like the Carl Gustav, but then they also still have something like the M72, the 66mm light anti-structure munition or light anti-armor weapon to sort of augment at that squad level. It's very light, it's very maneuverable, and it will deal with the majority of threats. And if it doesn't, then you have that bigger bang, the Carl Gustav, to deal with it. So, you know, there's lots of things where it just falls through the cracks because it's fairly low priority. It's seen as sort of too far in the weeds. It's the small stuff. We don't need to sweat the small stuff. And I'd like to say to people, no, actually, you really do need to sweat the small stuff, because when you're in that high intensity urban fight, it's the small stuff that gets you those footholds into that building. It's the small stuff that then gets you maneuvering forward. It's the small stuff that stops you having to rely on joint fires to the same extent, because if you can prosecute the threats by your organic section and platoon level assets, then you're reducing your amount of joint fires requirements, which then puts burdens on your C2 networks. It causes more collateral damage, and it puts more restrictions on your maneuver and that sort of thing. So actually, we really need to start sweating the small stuff.
All right. I agree. You know, I'm a big fan of the small stuff of like, can your bullets penetrate concrete? But I'll leave that one. It is over to you, Jason.
Thanks, John. So my second wish, my former first wish, which is now my second wish, is actually very much related to John's first wish of this podcast. So this second wish was generated by reviewing a number of John, Stu's, and my wish lists from the 2021 and 2023 podcasts, in which I noticed that some of our wishes all had one common theme. John mentioned in his 2021 wish list, he would like to have a fully resourced urban warfare research center. And in his 2023 list, he wanted a U.S. Department of Defense line item for the U.S. Army 40th Infantry Division's Urban Operations Planners course in order to give it more resources. Stu mentioned in his 2021 wish list a bespoke compulsory urban operations planners course. And in 2023, he suggested that militaries must consider urban operations when it comes to buying equipment. My three wishes from the 2021 list, money, time, and resources in education. And my 2023 list, I wanted urban operations planners courses all over the world, not just in the United States, and urban operations professional development reading for all government organizations, both military and civilian. All of these wishes have one thing in common, and they cannot be generated until our senior political and military leaders who work at the strategic and operational levels understand that we need to focus and commit more resources on learning how to fight in this environment. That is my second wish. We have to have strategic buy-in. Now, you might be sitting there saying, well, hold on, Jay. If you review social media and YouTube, it appears that militaries around the world are becoming more interested in urban operations training because there's more videos and photos of those militaries doing that training. And it's fair to state that. I get that. And I can tell you a week doesn't go by when I'm receiving a request to teach an urban operations subject. I'll have done 25 speaking engagements this year, both online and in person, that are related to urban operations and or urban warfare history. So clearly there's a need and a want to learn more about how to conduct operations in this environment. And I'll suggest that the Russia-Ukrainian war and the Israeli-Hamas conflict are certainly emphasizing the need for more urban operations training. Yet the key thing that I am seeing, and again, you can say to me that you see videos and exercises all the time on urban operations training, but these requests for urban operations training are bottom-up requests, like John mentioned earlier. I've been very fortunate to have gone all over the world, both online and in person. I've taught urban operations training and urban warfare history to a number of countries around the world. And over the past few years, I'll suggest there's been this groundswell movement at the lowest levels amongst tactical and maybe some operational level units around the world to want to do urban operations training. But there's been very little or nothing coming down from the strategic levels of our governments and military stating we need to focus on more urban operations. Sure, you might have a publication come out on the latest strategic vision of how we're going to get our militaries ready for the operating environment of the present and future. And maybe the urban environment is briefly mentioned in a sentence, which is in a multiple page document, but that's it. We need more than just one sentence in a book that is supposed to be a crystal ball into the future of how we need to prepare our militaries. Now, again, some of our listeners out there might reply, well, come on, Jay, you know, senior political and military leaders have to look at the big picture and they might have multiple issues that they're dealing with. I get that. I really do. And I'm not suggesting that everybody and their dog has to become subject matter experts in urban operations and we have to commit 100% of our resources to learning about urban warfare. That's unrealistic. I'll put my urban warfare historian hat on. Michael Evans wrote a fantastic piece entitled City Without Joy, Urban Military Operations into the 21st Century. Fantastic read, very thought-provoking, very balanced. And Michael Evans states that when it comes to urban operations, there's two approaches. There's a specialist approach in which everybody and their dog, all ranks, all trades within the military, must become subject matter experts in urban operations. And then there's the generalist approach in which we note the trends that operations are becoming more urban focused. And so we start dedicating more resources to it while still understanding that militaries must be prepared to fight in any environment, urban, rural, jungle, mountain, Arctic. I think that is certainly a more realistic view. We cannot have everybody become focused on urban operations, but given the trends, we have to find that balance, becoming smart on urban operations across our militaries while still being prepared to fight in any and all environments. given that tactical and some operational units are now using their initiative to do more urban operations training, let's have our senior political and military leaders finally understand that they need to be providing more than one line in a publication that states, quote, and urban is becoming more frequent, unquote. Let's have them buy into the fact that urban operations are becoming more prevalent so we can have top-down direction that states we have to start committing more resources. That allows us to create John's fully resourced Urban Warfare Research Center, a U.S. Department of Defense line item for the 40th Infantry Division's Urban Operations Planners course, bespoke compulsory Urban Operations Planners courses, more time, more money, more resources. Once we get strategic buy-in, John, then we'll have all these things and these wishes will be granted. And that's my second wish.
So you want strategic buy-in as your wish?
Yes.
All right. Well, that's pretty sneaky of you to go back to all the other wish lists, but good on you. And I think if you had that under, you know, that Assistant Secretary of Defense for Urban Operations, you might be able to get some of that strategic buy-in. That was my one other wish list. Actually, it reminds me, which actually does lead into mine, so it's a little tangential, when General Mattis became Secretary of Defense and created the Close Combat Lethality Task Force with his strategic level emphasis and requirements to back brief him and requirements to get things done, and his emphasis on the close combat forces like the infantry, that you actually saw changes, which would, you know, which is what I'm arguing in number two, that the secretary could create not a task force, but an office. And I understand that it requires you to, you know, even if you had a zero growth mentality, to cut something. And I understand that. My wish, and I don't think we're going to get another round, so a hard-hitting push, is where I started at the strategic level with this position, which is actually becomes an office with power and resources and strategic priorities, just like General Mattis's task force. But I don't want this to be a task force, because that task force went away. When General Mattis left, he didn't have that strategic leadership. The task force was whittled down, resources cut from it, and it went away. And I know there's actually two guys left that are kind of trying to do what they can. But once you lose that strategic leadership, it's lost. What I want, and it kind of gets into this what the small stuff, but I think we've mentioned it in the list before. I probably have to check Jason on this, but I want drones. So from my year in review, now that I have been into Gaza four times, researching the IDF's approach to that unique historic urban warfare challenge, I've been in with the IDF in the north and with forces that have gone into southern Lebanon. Even the IDF were caught wanting of drones, which you would think after the history of the Ukrainian urban battles and how much drones have become pervasive, but also understanding there are nuances between Ukraine and Russia's air defense capabilities, electronic warfare capabilities, evolutions of drones. But in the close fight of urban warfare, that we are sending soldiers into rooms first is a travesty in our militaries. And because of the modern technologies, there is no reason, just like the IDF learned, that they don't turn a corner, they don't enter a room, they don't walk down an alley without a drone going down it first. But I have, and I think Stu from the capabilities development world will appreciate this, I have key performance indicators of what I'm talking about. So I want to be very specific. I don't want just more drones. I don't want more drones above us. I don't want more Black Hornets, Ravens, Predators, none of that. I want 10 drones at the squad level. So every squad in the military has 10 drones that are cheap, expendable, persistent drones. Drones are like bullets on the modern battlefield. I want them cheap, so under $5,000 per drone. I want them expendable, as in a class that which can be expended and there's not a massive investigation for a piece of sensitive equipment or expensive equipment going down. for expendable in my terminology, and persistent is that I want them to be able to fly an hour on a single battery. So I would assign key performance indicators, a dollar figure, a expendable status, and a number, because that you're going to go through a lot in an urban battle, and you need to put the fact that you have soldiers from Afghanistan to southern Lebanon going into urban areas or into houses without a drone going first, they're leading with their face, is a modern travesty. And it's an easy fix. It literally is an easy fix. Those key performance indicators would get you something, whether you tether it or it's electronic or whatever. There's so many evolutions of it now, of putting something in front of the soldier entering that dense urban space where all the advantages of the defender, Stu, are there, would lead to that. So that's mine. It's pretty clear cut, but I wanted to, you know, if Santa sometimes goes off or doesn't bring it because it's not clear enough, I want to be very clear. 10 drones per squad, each one of them under $5,000, each one of them expendable. They can be written off. They're persistent. They're not 8-minute drones. Like, you know, they're drones. You can have another battery for them. I think it would give an immense capability for both mounted and dismounted forces in the urban environment. Okay, so that's all the time we actually have, guys. That's crazy that we only got one wish per, well, we got two wishes per person this year. Maybe that's because of me, but the host, what it is, I'll let every person do a parting shot. And I really appreciate your guys' time, but over to you, Stu, for your parting shot.
Well, firstly, just thanks very much for having us back on. It's always good fun to talk urban operations with you guys. And I think my parting shot would be, building on what Jason said, can you go back through all the previous wish lists that we've got? And the more that militaries keep talking about urban operations, very few, if any of them, have actually been ticked off going back even 3 years. So it's showing you that actually, as much as there's an awful lot of talk about urban operations, there's not an awful lot of actual forward momentum. And I think that really fundamentally has to change. So that's what I'd like to see, is that, you know, this wish list actually, you know, grows some legs and actually results in some change.
Great. Thanks, Stu. Jason, parting shot.
Can my parting shot be my third wish?
No, it cannot, Jason. But I'm sure you'll sneak it in there some way. Parting shot is like a theme or something. But go ahead, Jason.
I really don't have a parting shot, John. I just agree with both you and Stu, and that, you know, the more we talk about it and the more we see it, we need more action and we need more writing and we need more experts on this particular topic. And that's really it.
Right. And I think our paths, which we could do, like, how do we get into urban? Each one of us got into urban warfare studies through a different path, but a passion for each one of us. So people could start becoming experts now. I mean, that's my thing too, is like, we have these wishes, but, you know, if you want to focus on this, there's definitely lots of growth in this field. You couldn't pick a better field where there's just less that's been done on it. And although we mentioned some of the works all the way back to SLAM, SLA Marshall, but there's a gap in expertise. There's a gap in writing from, you know, people always argue I write only tactical stuff, but up to the operational and strategic and approaching urban operations, like our last, the podcast, how do you attack a city, how to defend a city, all of this stuff. So I'm sorry you couldn't get your third one in there, Jason. I really appreciate you. I really appreciate Stu and all of our work. I'm not going to make a wish that we don't have to talk about them next year, but that's a hope, right? There's a hope that there is actual, real, measurable changes for militaries, all of ours, to do something about preparing for urban warfare. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much. Merry Christmas.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for listening to the Urban Warfare Project podcast. The podcast is produced by the Modern War Institute at West Point. What you hear in each episode are the views of their participants and do not represent the positions of West Point, the Army, or the U.S. government. You can subscribe to the Urban Warfare Project podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. And be sure to check out NDY's other podcasts, as well as the new articles we're publishing every day on our website. Thanks again for listening.